Northeast at 8, 34 degrees across the board for Racine, Kenosha, Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018-2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack Andrea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And that is the infectious music of Sir Arthur Sullivan, who is one half of one of the most famous of musical teams. Sir Arthur Sullivan, composer, librettist W.S. Gilbert, and Gilbert and Sullivan responsible for more than a dozen absolutely delicious operettas from the late 19th century. And highlights from more than 10 of their operettas are going to be featured in a special set of gala performances by Carthage's J-Term Opera Workshop called And So Give Three Cheers, a Gilbert and Sullivan gala, Friday night and Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. in Carthage's Recital Hall. And with me to talk about Gilbert and Sullivan and these performances coming up this weekend are two of my colleagues from the music faculty, Allison Hull and Elena Batman, who have been assisting with the staging and preparation for this weekend's performances. We welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good to have you here. Ahead of us talking about what's going to happen this weekend, I think it would be fun to hear from each of you the experience that you yourselves have had with Gilbert and Sullivan before this. I know in both cases, you have performed Gilbert and Sullivan before, and just tell our listeners a little bit about what you've done and what the experience has been like for you.
Well, I did my very first Gilbert and Sullivan as a freshman in college, and I was one of the bridesmaids that never gets to go to a wedding in Ruttigore, and I just fell in love with that sensibility, that sense of humor, and the music was glorious, and I was really hooked kind of right away. I've been so lucky that I've been able to do Gilbert and Sullivan just about everywhere that I've gone. I lived in Chicago for a while, and I was able to do several different operettas of theirs there. When I was a young artist at Glimmerglass, I was in a production of Patience, and I've been able to do another production of Patience with the Skylight. So Gilbert and Sullivan has been a real staple in my repertoire, my performing wheelhouse over all of these years that I've been a performer.
Excellent. That was Alison Hull.
Elena Batman, what has your experience been with Gilbert and Sullivan?
Well, my experience is not nearly as extensive as Alison's, but my first GNS show was Pirates of Penzance, and that was in a local theater company in high school one summer. And it was great fun, of course. And then when I was an undergraduate, we did Mikado, the Mikado. And then as a young professional, I was in a production of Trial by Jury that took place in an actual courtroom in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it was covered by Phil Ponce, and he came to my place of work and interviewed me. So it was very exciting. I impressed all the people in the law office where I was working. But it was great fun, and I loved it immediately because it required real legitimate singing, but the book was fun. It was very clever. It was fun. It was funny. It was smart, but you got to really sing. And I think those are the two things that really drew me to it. And I love it to this day. I just can't, I wish we could do more of it.
Absolutely.
Well, my initial experience with Gilbert and Sullivan predates both of you considerably since to start with, I'm older than both of you. And my initial experience was all the way back in fifth grade.
Oh,
so
my gosh. Wow.
Nearly during the lifespan of Gilbert and Sullivan themselves. But I was lucky to grow up in a town that had an amazing elementary school music program, and in fifth grade we did extensive excerpts from Gilbert and Sullivan. The song I remember most specifically is I Am the Monarch of the Sea.
Oh.
from HMS Pinafore, and never at the time did it even dawn on me how extraordinary it was at that young age to be exposed to Gilbert and Sullivan. And since then I haven't done a ton of it, although I was Coco in the Mikado and the judge in Trial by Jury. So and have dabbled in a little bit of it here and there, but it's certainly fun to be digging into it in serious fashion. Maybe the two of you could say something about what you think this opportunity offers up to the singers that we have, and in particular, what it offers to the folks who are more straight opera, so to speak, versus some of the other students who are part of this who actually come more from the world of musical theater.
Absolutely. So something most opera folks don't get experience with is dialogue. And there is a ton of dialogue that propels the stories of Gilbert and Sullivan shows. So it's been really fun to see these students that aren't totally used to doing it, getting their mouths around this, like, this kind of crazy fun period dialogue that is so very British. And some of that, you have to absolutely believe the story, and Gilbert and Sullivan shows can't be done without movement. Movement and acting and belief in what you're doing. Of course, all opera requires their actors to really believe in the characters, but these are often such silly circumstances that they have to accept and portray with absolute certainty and commitment. So there's a lot to be gained acting-wise doing these. And like Elena said, it's real legit singing. You have to really be able to sing to do this stuff. And then they get this added bonus of doing this dialogue and all of this movement.
Anything to add?
Well, just a few things. I think that it, because it is so smart and there is a tradition, so there are performance practices that you can acknowledge, but you really need to understand as a performer who these characters are, and you do have to live on stage. And I think oftentimes for young opera singers, they are not accustomed to that. They think it's enough just to get the right notes and rhythms, and that's enough, or to sound pretty. And it demands much more than that. And for our theater kids, it is a chance to really sing. They really have to think about their singing, but also incorporate all the things they know about stagecraft.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a great bridge that both both sides gain something and have a lot of fun, and it elevates, I think, they sort of appreciate what each group brings to the show.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Carthage's J-Term Opera Workshop, which is called So Give Three Cheers, a Gilbert and Sullivan gala. It's being performed Friday night and Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. in Carthage's recital hall. Alison, what would your advice be for someone thinking about coming in terms of, are they going to understand it? Do they need to read up on it? Or by and large, do you think most of what's going to happen will make a fun kind of sense to people coming?
Oh, I think they'll get it. And actually, Greg has contributed some great dialogue to sort of tie all of our scenes together that sort of helps introduce each of the operas being featured and string them together in an order that makes sense. So thank you for that contribution. If you want to, they're so interesting. So I don't think it's necessary, but it might add to the enjoyment of the performance to just do a little search of Gilbert and Sullivan and learn a little bit about their partnership and their background. It's extremely interesting how they sort of feuded and then worked with each other and then feuded and how that relationship evolved over years of working together.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm always intrigued by the fact that they were such an odd couple. Sir Arthur Sullivan came from the world of really proper concert music, and W.S. Gilbert was from the world of what we would almost call burlesque. Mm-hmm. I mean, the British version of that, but I mean, very highbrow, very lowbrow, and they, in a sense, met in the middle, and that chemistry is just amazing.
Yeah, a case where the sum is greater than each of the individual parts. I mean, they're both talented in their own right, but when they come together, it's very unique, and it's elevated, and it's not quite as good when they aren't with each other, when they don't work together. I think people will understand this, and yes, I think, Greg, you've done a fantastic job of writing dialogue that will sort of explain it. So if you're not that familiar, you won't be lost. You'll be able to enjoy it. But if you do have some knowledge of Gilbert and Sullivan, or if you know a few of the shows, you know, if you can do a quick read of the synopsis, it will add to it. Mm. So I think that you certainly could come in and take it for what it's worth at face value, and you will enjoy it and understand it. But anything you can add to that will just enhance your enjoyment.
It's always a plus. Yeah, I think you're right. And Allison, you made sure that something was added to the printed program that people will have that I think is kind of a neat addition to the proceedings.
Yes, as our students found out pretty readily, there's a lot of vocabulary that's both not part of the American vernacular and not part of sort of our modern consciousness. So we've assembled a glossary of unusual words for anyone who comes to peruse and get acquainted with. And there were a couple in there that I didn't know what they meant. So it's pretty handy.
Very good. And one of the things I really appreciate is that this certainly has a lot of favorites that will be very familiar to a whole lot of people, but it's not just favorites. It's also rarer, more uncommonly heard gems that are kind of mixed in there as well. From each of you, I'd love to hear about a moment from this that you especially liked, maybe a piece that you think is especially fun and interesting in this production, and or even a special moment within a song that you think is really fun.
Well, I do like there. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a number with the men towards the end of the show that Allison staged. And that is great fun. That is not a number that I was familiar with. So I think it's especially funny because just the subject matter, but also the enjoyment of the young men who are singing in this.
Right. We'll say it's a tongue-in-cheek takeoff on Three Little Maids from School, which is from the Mikado. But and this is something that Gilbert and Sullivan themselves came up with in a later show called Princess Ida. And yeah, it's a fabulous moment. How about you, Allison?
Oh, I like so many of the things. There's a couple that I really like. There's a duet from Patience that the two actors involved are just giving themselves over so beautifully to how much fun and how ridiculous this scene is, and it's just a joy to watch, and you can feel how much fun that they're having. And I think that's half of the reason why we have more than 80 societies in the United States devoted to the production of Gilbert and Sullivan's works. There's so much fun to do, and they're bringing a lot of joy to it. So I really love that piece in particular. Mm.
Yeah, it's really kind of a miracle when you think about it that these pieces are so rooted in where and when they were created. and yet they have this staying power that's absolutely extraordinary. And if anything, they're every bit as popular, and certain masterpieces are maybe even more popular throughout the world now than they once were.
Mm-hmm. They're surprisingly timely.
Yeah.
I think that's the surprising factor, is that most of these are not dated, and it's like, wow, I guess because it's about real situations and human nature and human connections, and that is and human behavior, and it's not changed very much.
No. Mm, right. No. The more they change, it stay the same. Absolutely. Well, it's been great, great fun to collaborate with you and lead this talented cast of students in this production. And we want to remind everybody again that the performances are Friday night, Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. Maybe we should just say a quick word about the fact that the J term during which this was prepared was truncated by Mother Nature, and what that has meant now in the closing stretch of final preparation.
Yes, we've had at least three, maybe four rehearsals that were affected by the weather. Two of them had to be canceled completely because of the polar vortex. And we just had some very stalwart students who we came in last night. We met today. We're having another rehearsal tomorrow. And this week was supposed to be, is actually not supposed to be, but actually is, the first week of classes for all of them. So they're
for second semester.
For second semester. So they're taking time out of their classes, getting some releases from other professors. Thank you. to be brushing up since we went an entire week without rehearsal before performances. So they're pulling it together, bless them.
Hmm. Yeah. It's great work that they're doing.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So again, Friday night, Saturday night, 7:30 p.m., free and open to the public in Carthage's Recital Hall. So give three cheers at Gilbert and Sullivan Gala. And Allison Hall and Elena Batman, thank you for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for having us.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD. That was the closing minutes of the overture to the Pirates of Penzance of Gilbert and Sullivan. At the top of the show, we heard a little from the overture to the Yeoman of the Guard. And again, the performances of the J-Term Opera Workshop Gala. So give three cheers. Will be tomorrow night and Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. in Carthage's Siebert Chapel. 8:29, this is the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. In part two of today's program, we're going to be hearing from a talented pianist by the name of Donald Ryan, who is one half of the father-son piano duo team of Ryan and Ryan. And they're going to be performing at Carthage College Tuesday evening as part of Carthage's Chamber Music Series.
And ahead of my conversation recorded with Donald Ryan, I want you to be able to listen to a little bit of the playing of Ryan and Ryan. This is a piece called Brasileira. It's from Darius Milhaud's suite for a piano duet called Scaramouche. Again, this is father and son, Donald and Baron Ryan. Again, this is the father and son team of Donald Ryan and Baron Ryan performing music of Darius Milhaud from his piano duet suite called Scaramouche. They are performing at Carthage College this coming Tuesday evening as part of Carthage's Chamber Series. And now here is a portion of my conversation with Donald Ryan, the father half of this exciting piano duo. I want to have you share with our listeners the story of how you came to the United States from your native country of Trinidad and Tobago. First of all, let's hear a little bit about what your childhood was like there in that beautiful country and what role music played in your earliest childhood.
Well, it was almost all-consuming. My father, who was an avid amateur musician, he played sax and piano and guitar. He was the pastor of a local church, and my mother played piano also. They did not play in the church. My mother didn't, per se. There was other church musicians, but I grew up hearing music, and I grew up wanting to play it. I don't recall ever not wanting to play music, except for the time when I had to practice. They told me I needed to practice, you know, 15 minutes a day was torture.
Oh, dear. So you loved...
I did not want to play then. But just for fun, they could hardly hold me away from the piano. Hmm. So I was very active in our church and similar organizations, and I don't know, in college. Of course, I took to it like a duck to water.
Right. So you love to play, not necessarily love to practice, but you were clearly someone with some serious talent. One of the hallmarks of Ryan and Ryan is this wide-ranging repertoire that you play. Has that been a hallmark of your playing right from the start, or as you were first playing piano, what were you most interested in playing, or what felt most comfortable to you?
Well, I started playing by ear. So I played what I heard in church, and I played what I heard on the radio. And that pretty much was it. It did not matter the style. I did the classical because they thought I had some talent and needed to have it focused and trained. And I had not just the practical, as we call it, but the theory. And I found out with the theory, all I was learning, well, I would say 90% of what I was learning was labels for what I already instinctively knew and was doing.
Interesting.
So I had no problems merging or having the classical and the non-classical coexisting. I did not see any conflict.
It was all just music to you. And
it was all just music, yes.
And all good music. So it had to be quite a big step for you to come to the United States to study music. Tell us about that decision and whether or not it was a difficult move to make.
Well, it wasn't so much a decision as it was an opportunity. I had I had no plans really after high school for what I was going to do with music. I was you know, I suppose I would have got a job someplace, but not necessarily as a musician. And someone heard me in Trinidad and asked, someone from here in the U.S., would I be interested in studying music after high school? And I said, certainly. And he said, would you mind if I asked around for a place for you to study music in the U.S. And I had no objections. So it wasn't really an active seeking on my part. I was just kind of going with the flow, with the next best step. And then the next thing I heard was, how about? And it was Oral Roberts University here in Tulsa. And I said, okay. So the thing was, ORU was the only, and I got a scholarship offer from them. And they were the only ones I got a scholarship offer from to have pursued some another place with the rate of exchange and not having, I don't know that recording even, this is back in 68, we use that often in auditions. But it was just one of those things. Nobody at ORU had heard me. They just took the recommendation of this friend, Jim Fortunato, and cobbled together some different types of scholarships and made an offer. And my father and mother said, you know, why not? So I came and... Okay, as far as, was it a difficult transition? No, it wasn't. I was musically prepared for it in my training and did not have any problems fitting in musically. By then, I had my attitude on practicing had changed dramatically. I liked it by then, and so... My teacher, Andrew Wazowski, he inspired me quite a bit, and I worked practice for him quite a bit and made great progress.
Well, obviously, something went very much right because, of course, you are enjoying this marvelous career that has given pleasure to so many, including yourself, and of course now includes collaboration with your son, Barron. Ahead of Barron coming along, were you already someone who really enjoyed playing duos for double piano, or is that something that really waited for when your son came along, who turns out to also be a gifted pianist?
Well, I had done it before with a fellow named Peter Simon. Peter and I did a few things. I even got to play with him at Carnegie Hall. He booked a concert there back in, it's got to be about almost 30 years ago. And didn't do that much with him because his son played. And so he started a thing with Simon and Son, with his son. And the friendship with Peter kept on. And then Barron came along, and we had been asked to do a concert together, kind of a dedicatory concert for a piano that his high school got. And so we put together something, and it went fairly well. And we did another couple of things, and by then he was studying at the University of Oklahoma, doing piano performance. And my wife said, you know, how about you and Barron doing something after he finishes? So finishes college. So we put the proposal to him, and after a year or so, he said, well, let's try it. So that's how it came to be. And because, you know, growing up in a music-loving family, he knows very well what I like. And unfortunately, a lot of what he likes is what I like.
Ah.
So we have a good simpatico going musically. That's why when we play, when we improvise, we can almost like read each other's minds.
That's so important. Let's hear a little more about Barron's start on the piano, which I think occurred very, very early in life. Was it just a foregone conclusion that was going to happen? And I wonder, to what extent did you balance concerns about wanting to foster it and encourage it versus not forcing him to do something he wasn't necessarily excited about doing? I mean, I think a lot of people who themselves are musicians face that challenge with a son or daughter that might also want to play basketball or might also want to play video games or whatever else can intrude in the proceedings. What was it like working with Barron as a young, up-and-coming pianist, as a youngster?
He is the youngest of three children. He has two older sisters. And my wife, Sharon, also has, she's a musician, has a music degree. We have the same undergraduate degree in music. And so we made the decision that all three children would learn to play the piano. It's kind of like learning to brush one's teeth. It was just something you did. Not that we would make professional musicians out of them, but that they would get good enough to enjoy playing some music. And they all have. Barron, another component was that they attended a lot of my performances in this area, and heard me practicing, and heard me teaching in the house, and so they grew up with a love of music. So Barron was the one who pushed me for lessons because he was, you know, at times I was so busy teaching other people's children that I didn't have enough time to devote to my own children. kind of like the cobbler's children's shoes. And he would press me for the lessons. So I thought, okay, he has the initiative. And I was his first teacher and taught him all of the elementary things. And he started wanting also to play by ear. And I taught all of them to pick out tunes, because I think that's an important element in being an instrumentalist. Hmm. So he did that. And of course, he got interested in the basketball and other things, and golf. Then Tiger Woods was big the first time. You know, Baron got himself some golf clubs and did some caddying and such. But he wasn't. He didn't let me know. Well, as a matter of fact, he did let me know that he did not want to be a full-time musician because musicians didn't make enough money.
Mm.
I guess I refused him and his sisters too many things too many times because we couldn't afford it.
Mm.
So he wanted to be an engineer like Bill Gates.
Mm. We're listening to my conversation with Donald Ryan, father of Baron Ryan, and the two of them comprise a piano duo team called Ryan and Ryan. They're going to be performing together at Carthage College next Tuesday night as part of Carthage's chamber music series. Let's hear them in something quite lighthearted. This is the sort of music that often is a very big part of their concerts, right alongside the works of Rachmaninoff and Mio and others. This is actually a piece called Memphis Stomp. And again, this is the piano duo, father and son team of Ryan and Ryan, performing it from their album called Face to Face. Donald and Baron Ryan performing Memphis Stomp by David Grusin from the film score to the movie The Firm. And this is from Ryan and Ryan's album called Face to Face. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. Tell us about the team that you have and how you work together. For instance, as you practice, as you prepare, as you put programs together. I mean, as the father, are you really kind of the musical leader of this team, or do you not approach it so much in that way?
No, we approach it more 50-50. For instance, you're doing Rachmaninoff, the second piano suite. You're doing two movements of that at Carthage, and it was Baron who brought it to my attention. He had been listening to it and got excited about it and said, could we do this? And I, of course, Rachmaninoff is one of my favorite composers, and this is one of my favorite works of his. So I said, yes. A lot of, we each bring to the table things that we like and check on the other's approval. Then we see how it fits in the program. As I said, our tastes are quite similar. So there's a very slim chance of one not liking what the other one would like to do. I guess that's the best answer I can give. It's more of a 50-50. I don't take a leadership role in that, except when it's something to do with musical interpretation. That I think, stylistically, we could do this better because I may know I have more experience in the style. No, that's when it's more so classical. When we get to jazz or some of the funk stuff, then it's equal contribution, I would say. Sometimes even more so his contribution than mine. We have a couple of things that we ourselves arranged for two pianos. And he has one that is just kicks. It's like a Jackson 5 arrangement for two pianos. So, that's a long answer to a short question. But in essence, it's more equal participation.
Tell our listeners what they can experience from the concert that you're going to be playing at Carthage on February 12th. Not necessarily every single piece you're going to be playing, but the kind of mixture of styles that they are likely to experience, and also what you try to create when you perform a program like this.
Okay. Well, what they'll see are two guys who like each other, if that helps, like music, like to play the piano, like performing with each other. We have, I think that's one of the things we communicate. We just like what we do, and we like playing for people. They can expect two or three different styles. We start with Copland, Hodan from Rodeo. And that's punchy right at the beginning. We don't do anything too austere or unapproachable. Everything we do is tuneful. A lot of rhythmic things, but nothing that leaves the listener wondering what was that or what was that all about. The all that we do, I think we do excellently. So everybody is sure to like at least half of the show, and I think they would like all of it.
Mm. I think you're absolutely right about that, and I know many people are already very, very much excited that Ryan and Ryan are coming to Carthage again Tuesday evening. That's the 12th of February as part of Carthage's Chamber Music Series, and it will be the father and son duo of Ryan and Ryan, Baron Ryan, and the father, Donald Ryan, my guest today. Donald Ryan, it's been great to meet you and to hear something about the story of Ryan and Ryan, and we wish you safe travels to Wisconsin and many more years of happy and joyous music making.
Thank you. We are looking forward to it immensely.
And by the way, I look forward to also having a conversation with his son, Baron Ryan, to be part of Monday's morning show. But to finish out today's program, father and son, Donald and Baron Ryan, in the closing couple minutes of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. Again, this is from their album called Face to Face. Music of George Gershwin, the artistry of Ryan and Ryan. And you can go to carthage.edu and click on the link for The Bridge to find out more information about Tuesday night's concert and, of course, about other events coming up at Carthage in the coming days, weeks, and months. It's 8:58 here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, we'll have a very busy program. It's going to include a preview of an upcoming event for people who are dealing with the aftermath of trauma. And you'll hear my conversation with Liz Arch, who is author of a book called The Courage to Rise, Using Movement, Mindfulness, and Healing Foods to Triumph Over Trauma. Later in tomorrow's program, I'll be joined by Dr. Peter Dene, a faculty colleague from the music department at Carthage and a conductor of the treble chorale, which is just back from a memorable trip to Tanzania. And they have a homecoming concert coming up this Sunday afternoon. On Monday's program, among other things, we'll hear from Baron Ryan, the son of Donald Ryan, so the other half of the piano duo team of Ryan and Ryan. On Tuesday, we will be previewing for you a American Experience documentary that is airing called C-Lab. And to look back at that monumental accomplishment that is so largely forgotten. Also, we'll be talking with representatives of the Kenosha Public Library about this year's Big Read Project. And I'm very excited about next Wednesday having on the program James Fallows and his wife talking about their latest book called Our Towns. They are coming to Carthage on Monday the 18th.